I'm Becky Gannon, and I'm mad about miniatures. Today, I talk with Aira of Bentley House Minis. Her miniature Addams Family house became a phenomenon on YouTube, and she's now working on recreating the Beetlejuice house in mini, among other things. Let's go talk to Aira. Hello, Aira. It's so great to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Oh, I'm excited too. So just recently, I was at the Tucson Mini Time Machine, which, as you know, is a miniature museum. And I was walking around and I saw this fabulous creation, the Captain's Quarters, and it's by you.
Yes, I just recently went out last year to install it into the museum, and I'm so glad you saw it. It's been so fun to have a piece that was purely from my own imagination and creation be in a miniature museum and have people be able to go see it.
Right, because many of your creations, as we'll talk about, are based on like Addams Family or Beetlejuice or some pop culture. But this is just from your mind and some of the minds of your subscribers.
Correct. So I call it a channel project. I have a YouTube channel. And so it was a project that started on my channel. And so people sent in ideas. And so my ideas, along with the subscribers' ideas, all kind of snowballed into this project.
That is so cool that you can get that give and take on YouTube.
I really enjoy it. I try to at least have one channel project going at a time. And I think it spurs on other people's creativity as well, because even if I don't take all of the ideas or I'm not able to use all of the ideas, sometimes they get so excited about their own idea. They're like, okay, I'm going to do it. Like you weren't able to do it, but I'm going to do it. And, you know, I get to see their projects as well.
Right. Well, it gets them thinking about what could I make and what would be possible and what would be really cool to see. So you have a huge YouTube channel and you've been on YouTube how long?
Since 2016 is when I originally started, and I started making just kind of general art videos. And it wasn't until I put up a miniature video that I realized there was kind of a niche in the market for miniature videos. There weren't as many as the art videos and people just really enjoyed it. And I was like, I think we're going to go full-time miniatures, and I have not regretted it. Not one day.
Nobody ever does. Once you go miniature, you can't go back. So anyway, this fabulous creation in the Tucson Museum, it is an 18th century ship captain's quarters, but then it's inside an alien ship, correct?
Yeah, so that the original idea was to just take some little model ships that I had and make some kind of 17th or 18th century ship captain's quarters, just wood planking and old-timey furniture and these model ships displayed. That was the original idea. And I thought that was just going to be it. But as most projects and ideas tend to do, they grow and grow and grow.
And the alien ship is actually quite a bit bigger than the captain's quarters.
Right. So it ended up being that the ship part of the project is much larger than the original piece that was just to highlight these tiny little ships. So the original idea of the ships are so minuscule in comparison to the overarching idea of the entire project, which when it finally finished up, because I kind of had a rush at the end, like 2 months to finish everything up before it went to the museum. When I finally like just stopped and took a moment and stepped back and looked at it, I was like, what just happened? Because it seemed like so suddenly it went from a small thing to something as large as the Addams Family house, which was the largest project I had ever made up to that point. And it just grew. So,
but I love that. I love that it started small. And even though the little ships are small in there, I think they really set the mood. But I got the idea immediately that this was like kind of like a Victorian gentleman's, although it's a woman captain, like their discovery den, you know, something with all their travels in it.
Right. Yes. Very personal to the captain. And the ultimate idea is that it's been passed down from captain to captain and preserved over the years, eventually to the point where the captain had to enclose it in a spaceship, because captain is actually an alien. as you kind of figure out throughout the story, the captain is trying to preserve these ship pieces. So there's multiple pieces of the old ship inside of the spaceship. So that was part of the story that just kind of developed along with the project. So as you're staring at a project for years, by the time it's done, I kind of come up with these stories. And then I have my subscribers asking questions about, like, why is this here? What is this part of the project? And I have to kind of make it make sense in my head and then share that story with the audience.
One thing I really noticed about the entire project is, you know, many miniatures have sort of a front and a side and a back, like a dollhouse or a diorama. Mm-hmm. I did a video, but then I was trying to, like, get the best angle to photograph it. But every single side has something. So I was like, but I don't want to miss this. I don't want to miss this. It's very 3D. And I could tell when I read that you were an architect, it made a lot of sense because every angle is considered. There's no sort of forgotten corner, both in terms of architecture and in terms of detail and story. So you worked as an architect for a little while?
I was an architectural intern. I never made it all the way up to architect because there's a lot of, like, tests and engineering and things that you have to go through even after you complete schooling. I just got really, really bored doing the same door schedules and things in the architecture firm. And what I really missed from school was creating the models. And so while I was in the architecture firm working, I worked there for about 4 years, I went and bought a dollhouse. And that was where I could get back to my model making enjoyment. And then I could really, you know, because when we were in school, we made some really interesting, fanciful projects to kind of boost our creativity. But I realized really quickly in the real world, you don't get to do a lot of that. It's mostly you're building four walls and a ceiling and making sure it doesn't fall down. Being in the dollhouse world gave me back that excitement of being able to create whatever my mind could imagine.
That's really cool. I can see that because occasionally you'll see architectural models, but they're usually for really big projects.
Or they're in the computer completely. And I remember being in the firm asking if they needed a model, if I could be on the team to make the model. And they were like, oh, we just do that in the computer now. And it was just very disappointing to me because I wanted to do that. So I had to go and do it on my own.
And you did. You certainly did. One thing I love about the project, the Captain's Quarter, is, of course, that juxtaposition of the alien ship and the captain's quarters. But I love that it's not, they both look old. It's mm-hmm. not new versus old, but one's metal, one's wood. What kind of material did you use for the alien ship?
Both parts of it are made with mostly foam board or insulation board, and paper. And I really love turning paper into something that looks like metal. It's really fun technique to try and do. And I think there's a lot of history in science fiction that shows used and lived in spaceship spaces. So Star Wars is a lived in universe. It's very old and it's crumbling. And so I wanted to bring some of that, which actually, if you look at the project, the newer part of the project, the spaceship, is actually in worse repair than the captain's quarters, the center part, which is arguably supposed to be older, but it almost shows you that there's more care and concern for the captain's quarters section, the two rooms that belong to the captain, than some of the other ship that's basically just there to protect it and keep it intact.
That's so true. You know, that's a really good point about the sci-fi, the ship looking lived in. And one thing I've always noticed about that is when I was growing up, often sci-fi, things look new. And mm-hmm. then sometime when Star Wars came, everything changed.
Yeah.
They provided this lived-in look, and that's sort of become the standard ever since.
Right. Star Trek has a very new look.
Yes.
And we have a little bit of that in the captain's changing room. It's like just a small room, and I have couple doors in there, and it was very hard for me to not age it because I love aging things. But then the cargo space, I wanted it to look very used and like there had been all sorts of cargo going in and out of it for years. I have always enjoyed the used aesthetic or the age aesthetic. And so getting to really go for it in the spaceship section was really fun.
I am coming around to distressing because it just shows so much more of the story.
Right.
And I think that's what's great about, like, I've been doing houses that sort of look like real people houses. And I want to try, from your inspiration and others, I want to try something that's more fantastical, because I think you can really get a lot more of a story that way. Because when you start with something that doesn't look real, then you have to explain why it's there. And I think that's what leads to that story and that creation of amazing things.
I think we as humans have a natural inclination towards story. With our natural curiosity, we want to figure out what happened. And I think that's why a lot of true crime is really interesting to people. And I know there's some people who do miniature true crime type scenes, which is totally interesting and a whole nother topic, but we're just naturally curious. And so I think it just brings people even more into a project if there's something that leads that story. So say I have a project called The Abandoned Coffee Shop, and people wanted to know, why was it abandoned? If it was abandoned, why was the coffee pot still there? Why is the apron still draped over the chair? Like, why didn't they move all the stuff out? Why is the stuff still there? What happened? And so it draws the audience in to try and discover the secret of the scene.
I love that. And one thing I really noticed with your channel projects is you actually have some miniatures in the Captain's Quarters, like books and things that were sent in by subscribers, by listeners.
Yeah, I found that a lot of people wanted to participate in my projects, and I really enjoy that. But I also found that there were people sending in parts of the project that I wanted to create, and I felt bad that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to use their creations because I can't have them create everything, or I won't have anything to put in my YouTube videos.
Right.
And then sometimes it's the journey of discovery for me, because I want to figure out how to make it and how to make it match the theme or the pop culture reference or whatever it is. So I found if I made a goal or I made a project for each person to make if they wanted to participate, that it was much easier for me to guarantee that the work and the effort that they put into those projects would make it into the final project. So the Captain's Quarters, I wanted a shelf full of books. And I hate making books. It's one of the things I do not like making, because when I make them, I just want to, like, you know, machine them out really fast. And they end up looking all the same. It's not an interesting bookshelf. But the Captain's Quarters bookshelf is so unique because it's books from all over the world. And there's actually a map on the wall above the bookshelf that shows where all the books came from, which is really, really cool.
That is such a cool idea.
Right. And a lot of people sent in books that the spine or the title of the book has something to do with where they're from. And it just worked so perfectly with a project that's about a traveler traveling and all of these items coming in. And I even had other creators that have other miniature projects with captains in them. Their captains wrote letters and sent books. And so they have from other creative projects coming in and sending letters to my captain. And so I have books from other, not even parts of Earth, but other creative worlds, I guess I would say.
Oh, I love that, because your captain, especially since she is an alien, she would have that. She would have captain friends, and her ancestors would have written letters. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So one thing I thought was very brave of you was to let someone else determine what the captain was going to look like in the doll.
Yes, a very talented artist, Michaelina Kalinowski. She's from Germany. She randomly, I don't know if she was joking or not, but she'd been posting on my Work Table Wednesday on Facebook, and that's where people can post what they've made, and then I get to see their projects. So it's really fun. And she had been posting all these amazing sculptures, and I had said something about the captain, and she was like, "Oh, I'd love to sculpt it for you." And I'm like, "Are you serious, or are you joking, or what?" And she was like, "No, I'm actually serious." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness." And so I reached out to her. We worked it out. I gave her full creative control. I told her she could be any Well, I didn't even know it was a she. I said, the captain can be whatever you want. My only stipulation was that the captain figure needed to work with the furniture I was creating. Because if the captain was a whole different shape or size, it wouldn't really make sense with the furniture. So that was my only stipulation. So when I received the captain, it was a complete surprise. And Michaelina and her family both wrote the captain's backstory, which then I needed to incorporate into my story, which was a whole, it was a whole different type of challenge, but it made everything really fun.
So you didn't even have a peek of what she was going to look like until...
I'm trying to think. I do think I knew that the captain was going to be a humanoid figure at some point. Not have like tentacles or anything. No, I still didn't know what I was going to be opening when I opened the package.
Now, when you look at the doll, which is fabulous, by the way, she does actually look pretty human, but there's sort of a secret there. Can you share that?
Yes. So she glows under UV light, and the artist used UV paint and maybe even UV clay. I'm not quite sure. But if you put a UV light over her, even through her clothes, you can see the light shining, and also her eyes shine under UV light. That's when we realized the captain was an alien. So the captain's alien form can be seen in the ship's figurehead, which is also displayed and kind of held up in a restoration bay inside the ship. So it's a little bit of a hint to what the captain may look like in alien form.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it's sort of in a hammock with chains. And at first I thought she had a prisoner. And I'm like, what's the story there?
If you listen to the story on my channel, it hints to that was the figurehead that was on her father's ship. And there's also the ship's crow's nest is in there. It's been adapted with all sorts of paneling and buttons to help the captain steer the ship and use the cargo bay. So those are the three different pieces of the ship that are displayed within the spaceship.
That's what I love about your projects, too, is at the end you do a complete story video.
Yes.
And it really kind of brings it all together.
It does. And I think I enjoy it because it takes all those stories that have been going on in my head over the years during the building of the project and puts it into one video.
So one of the things I love about all your work is that you make miniatures really accessible to everyone, I think. You also do a lot of things that are inexpensive. And at certain levels, miniatures can be expensive. So I love that you show how to like remake dollar store furniture, etc. And you probably know what I'm getting at. I love the cardboard house you made when we couldn't get to the craft store during the pandemic.
Yeah, during 2020, I mean, obviously we're at home. We're all kind of feeling isolated. And I really felt like it was a great time to use my YouTube channel and the audience that I had gained for some entertainment. We all needed some entertainment. We needed something. I was looking at our front door. It was just surrounded by boxes because we weren't going anywhere. People were ordering things. And I was like, we can make something with this junk cardboard that we all have sitting by our front door waiting to be put out to the recycling. Can we make an entire dollhouse and furniture out of stuff we find around the house? So I sat down, I sketched it out, and that night I started working on it, and I was like, we're going to do this. We're going to make a cardboard house. And the response was just amazing. It was probably my most participated in project, where people weren't sending things in. They were building their own entire project at home and then sending me photos. And then each time I put out a video with more furniture, people were building the furniture and putting it into other projects or putting it into their cardboard house. And there's still people who are building the cardboard house, which is, it just brings me joy every time I see somebody else's version of that project.
I think it's genius. And one thing I learned as I got into the miniature community, and in fact, I did start creating miniatures during the pandemic. While we were still able to, at some point, go to craft stores and everything, in other countries, they weren't allowed to go out at all, mask or no mask. So building supplies and everything were really limited for them. So I love that you did something that, regardless of where they were in the world, regardless of whether they had a stash of glue and fabric and everything, they were able to participate.
Well, and even today, there are some countries that don't have access to mat board or craft wood. And so most countries, I believe, have cardboard in some form, and makes it really easy for people to be able to grab it and just start creating and not worry about, do I have the right brand of the right exact thickness of this to be able to get the exact results. It was a lot more freeing and a more organic part of creating, where you could just grab something, cut a shape, see if it fit. If it didn't, put that one in the recycle bin, grab another one, recut it, glue it on, and then just keep going. So it was much more organic than some of the other tutorials I've made, which is like, this has to be exactly 3 5/8 inch wide.
Right.
A lot more accessible, not only because of materials, but there's some people who hate measuring, who hate the exactness of that. And then they watched and were like, oh, she just made a cube and then stuck this piece on it. I can make a cube and stick this piece on it. That helped as well, I think.
Yes, and also, everyone's got plenty of cardboard. You know, you can mess up over and over, and you were going to throw it away anyway.
Exactly. And that's why I tried to use other recycling pieces as well. So packaging from toys and things could be used for windows. And I even made the fairy character for the cardboard house from toilet paper. And so she's sculpted from toilet paper. You can even turn her upside down and you can see all the cardboard. And she was top heavy, so there's like nails hot glued down there and coins to try and keep her standing up.
I love the toilet paper fairy. And I love in the video how you explain that you don't have a toilet paper shortage and that you're just using a few sheets so people don't feel like you're stealing their precious toilet paper. That was a really nice touch.
You know, and I go back and watch those videos every now and then. It reminds me of like how things were at that moment. And, you know, a lot of my projects do become almost like diaries for me, even though it's not written. But I can look back, and I did keep the fairy. I did give away some of the furniture, but I have the fairy still. And she's a diary of what was going on in that moment, and the fact that I had to explain that it was okay for me to use a few sheets of toilet paper to make her is such a weird thing to have to explain. But in the moment, it made sense to the entire world.
You know, it's part of that history that is little that might get lost in the books, but really gives people an idea of what it was like to actually be living day to day.
And I think you can see more of that in a project like the cardboard house, because you are using things that are your day to day life items. And you can even see things like that in the Mini Time Machine Museum, where they have projects from different eras in time. And the materials they use, again, are like a diary of what was happening at that time in that location in that part of the world. And we're doing that today, even though it feels modern to us. You know, years down the line, they might be like, and they use this ancient form of toilet paper.
I love that a lot. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. Miniatures.com has launched two new exclusive dollhouse kits, the Charleston and the Contemporary Dollhouse. The Charleston is a beautiful, traditional, two-story Charleston-styled home with dramatic columns. The Contemporary Dollhouse is modern, chic, and streamlined, with two large rooms and a working garage door. Both unfinished kits are at miniatures.com. And remember, all orders over $35 ship free in the U.S. Visit miniatures.com today. Well, tell us about your current project.
Currently, I'm working on the Beetlejuice House, which is my pop culture project that I'm working on, and it is gigantic.
It's huge. How big is it?
Well, it's about 3 feet by 3 feet on a square base. However, it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 5 stories tall. It's sitting in front of me, so I'm counting. And because it includes the netherworld, which is the basement part of it, then the house sits on this very deep foundation that has a garage in it. Then it has the first floor, the second floor, and the attic. So it is quite a large project. It's going to be taller than the Addams Family House, but I still think the Addams Family House is a bit wider.
So here's a question. Do you measure it to make sure it can come in and out of the door?
I do.
Because I can see adding on that I might actually forget, even though that's pretty obvious.
The Beetlejuice house does not fit through the door holding it, like if you just carried it the way it is, but it's built like a layer cake, I would say.
Ah.
And so layer comes off and then it can be tilted sideways to go through the door. To me, it feels safer to carry it one layer at a time. So I wouldn't want anyone to transport it all in one piece. So that's how I was able to get past the door frame problem.
That makes sense. It's not your first rodeo with that. Yeah. You've had time to think about that. And I agree, it's so much easier to carry like a little section.
Yes, it is. And because it's made of foam board, it is fairly light. The only thing that's heavy is the Netherworld, because it is built from plywood, but it holds all the electronics and everything. So I didn't want it to have foam board and then like melt if it gets overheated or anything. So it is heavy.
Now, one thing I noticed about Beetlejuice is it's brighter colors, more stark contrast. You know, it's pop, 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 which I love, you know, black, white, red. Do you miss the browns and doing as much distressing?
Yes. First of all, I would say yes, completely. I do. However, I am enjoying jumping into something that is so different, because there are a lot of people who wanted me to do the Munsters, which I would love to do the Munsters house one day. A dream project. I would love to do that. But it felt too similar to the Addams Family. And I wanted to really push my limits on my skills. And the entire Beetlejuice house is ultra modern, because I'm doing it after the point where Delia had redone the entire house. So everything has to be perfectly lined up and clean lines and modern finishes, shiny modern finishes. And to me, oh, it's so hard not to cover those mistakes with just like a little bit of aging. I just have to either start it over again or be okay that it's looking that way. There are a few rooms that have the aged brown aesthetic that I love, which is Charles' study and the attic. So I'm finally getting to those spaces. So it feels like a little bit of like breath of fresh air to be like, okay, I can do this.
I know you mean, because I love the modern look. But when I started doing my Halloween house, I was just like, oh, I could just put a little moss on that and call it a day.
Yeah, I love that part of aging. It just makes it a lot easier to not have to worry about and keep moving forward than having to go back and redo something because it didn't line up perfectly.
I can see that. Well, how long have you been working on this project?
I think I started the Beetlejuice project pretty quickly after I finished the Addams Family House. So I think it has been going on since 2020, maybe late 2020 or 2021. I honestly can't remember. But it does seem to take me a while. The Addams Family House took me 11 years, which a lot of that time was life happening. I wasn't sitting in a room for 11 years only working on a dollhouse. I like to clarify that. But I include that time because life does happen. And if I just say, oh, yeah, it took me 3 years, and then people don't see in their own projects, see their projects be finished up in 3 years. It's like, well, yeah, you also have to, you know, be a parent or be a spouse or, you know, just be a part of your family and work and make money so you can eat. And, you know, so there's different things going on during these projects. But because this is my full-time job now, things are going a little faster than they were when I was doing the Addams Family project.
I've also had to draw in my mind a distinction between COVID and post-COVID. Because during COVID, mm-hmm. I completed a lot more than I can complete now. But I would just get up, I'd get my coffee, yeah. Go in the room, and just be there for hours. Post-COVID, I'm just not able to do that.
And I'm feeling a lot of that as well, because I started my online store in 2020. And so I had time to do the store and I had time to do my videos and everything got done. And because I wasn't going anywhere. now it's like, oh, wow, I have two full-time jobs and also life is happening again. We're going places and it's a lot harder to get everything completed. So I totally know what you mean.
It is. It is. I struggle sometimes to make time for the things that bring me joy and not the things that just, you know, we're out of toilet paper. But, you know, that has to be dealt with.
Yes.
So do you have a plan for what you'll do with it when you finish?
Well, I do know that the museum is interested in it. They were actually asking me if it would be ready for this past time when the captain's quarters was there, because the Adams Family House got to the end of its contract for staying at the museum. And they're like, what else do you have? Because my subscribers have been amazing at going to the museum, and they saw people, and I think especially during 2020, a younger generation has been brought into the miniature world. And so when people were out moving again, they came to the museum and they wanted to see the Adams Family House because they saw it online, not because, you know, their grandma did miniatures, but because they wanted to do it and they wanted to see it and were interested in the miniature art form. So they were like, we want to keep having your stuff here, because I think they started to see the value of miniatures that are being shown online in social media, not just YouTube, but Instagram, TikTok. There are so many amazing miniature accounts of people making amazing things, and it's bringing in this whole new generation. So they asked me if the Beetlejuice house was going to be ready. I was like, oh, no, 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 no. But they said, what else do you have? And I told them I had the captain's quarters. And they were like, what in the world is that? Because there's no, you know, Adam's family is easy to explain. Beetlejuice is easy to explain. You don't have to, because they, you know, their reputations precede themselves. But when it's a project that you just kind of made up, it was a little difficult to explain. Because even at that time, I didn't have everything finished. So I sent them pictures and I was like, okay, but this will be like this and this will be like this. Like, just trust me. It won't look like this when it's done. They were very open and very kind and patient. And I just sent them photos as it was getting completed. And they were like, okay, we trust you. And I was like, thank you.
Well, they should trust you. Look at how amazing your work is. And I have to admit, I wanted to see the Tucson Museum for a lot of reasons. But your work was definitely way up there. And, you know, it's interesting because I love that you're getting more interest, people more interested in mini museums, because I didn't even know there was miniature museums before COVID. Mm-hmm. And once I started doing miniatures, there was a point at which we realized we hadn't seen our son in California for way too long. And, you know, that was when people didn't feel safe flying. And so we decided to drive from Ohio to California and see our son. So on the way, I was trying to figure out, you know, what to do. And somehow, I started finding these miniature museums. So that's when I began visiting museums and sharing them online. And a lot of other people, they didn't know about them. And now that's one of the things I love sharing. I've had all the major museums talk on the podcast. And I love to travel and show people that. And I love to find obscure ones that nobody's heard of and say, go, go. And I get so much joy when people said it was just 30 minutes from me and I didn't even know. So I love that we can bring life to that.
I've heard the same comments of people in Tucson, and I'll talk about the Miniature Time Machine Museum, and they're like, I didn't know it was here. And then they go and they love it and they're like, I'm going to come all the time now, because they have events and they have classes. So I totally agree. I love that you're going around and sharing even the obscure ones that no one knows about.
But now hopefully they do.
Right.
Yes. And that's a really good point about Tucson. I was really impressed when I went there and when I did the podcast with Chad from My Miniature Brownstone about Tucson. They have some really nice features. They have a lot of changing exhibits. They have things that aren't traditionally thought of as miniatures, but are miniatures. And they have classes and events. It's really a lively and vital place.
It is. And their staff is amazing. And they're really open to ideas outside of what they've been doing for years. And so I was the one who actually approached them about the Adams Family House. And I just sent an email because it was a dream of mine to have it one day shown somewhere. And they got back to me and were open to talking to me. I was just blown away that they were just so kind, and they weren't just like, we don't know who you are, you know, because a lot of places are. There are probably a lot of museums that just get a billion emails. I totally understand that. But they were just open to talking to me. And I mean, they didn't say yes right away, but learning more about me and the project and trying to make things work. So I'm really excited about how open they are to other artists as well.
And look what it got them. It got them this amazing house. I bet if you sent other museums, and I'm not saying you did, letters and they didn't look at it, I bet they're just kicking themselves.
Anyway, I just think it's awesome that, you know, we have social media to share projects and also bring artists, not just myself, but other people that are creating amazing things in the miniature world to light. Because I really, before social media, I don't really know how that would have happened very easily.
I agree. And I'm really hoping it'll kind of normalize both miniatures and just making art more a part of your life.
Yeah, I agree.
So you brought up social media, and I wanted to bring up something that you and I talked about earlier, which is, you know, obviously you're big on YouTube, you're on Facebook, you're everywhere. But you told me that part of why you started working more on your website is the realization that your social media doesn't really belong to you.
Right.
You're kind of there by the grace of God. And I think that's something we kind of forget sometimes.
From the very beginning, I have constantly reminded myself that YouTube doesn't owe me anything. I don't have a contract with them. They could wake up tomorrow and just, my channel could be gone, honestly. And there's no repercussions to them for that. My work is on their platform. So I have been trying to build up my own website, probably not as successfully as I should be, but I have diversified, which is going on to Facebook and Instagram, but also building up my own store, because I would love to work in the miniature field for the rest of my life. Do I think YouTube will be around for the rest of my life? I don't know, because there have been social media platforms that have been like huge, and then something happens, and the next day everyone's like, I'm not going on there anymore, and they move to the next thing. So I can't really rely on the channel numbers right now holding me through the rest of my life. So while I have people's attention and while YouTube is happening, I need to take that attention and put it into my store and build that so that hopefully one day, I don't see myself ever stopping making my projects, my pop culture projects and things like that. But if YouTube goes away, I have my store where I can continue to work in the miniature field, continue to share things, continue to be a part of the miniature community. And that's something I can completely control because it's my website.
Right. And you also have what looks like most of your videos on there. That's something I wanted to talk to my listeners about, because if you just create your videos on Instagram and don't save them yourself, you don't have any of your work. And for a while I did that. And then one day I'm like, I need to have those videos that I can put on another platform when I want to do that. So even if you don't have your own website or store, you can still keep hold of your own videos and pictures so that you can recreate it or put it somewhere else if something else becomes the next sensation.
Right. And right now, you can get a lot of storage, like computer storage, for cheaper than it used to be. So it's worth it. I've saved all of my videos. And so one day there's no more YouTube and they're like, this is the next video platform. I'm just going to be there, hit upload, 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 upload. And there's going to be 200 videos uploading at the same time. And I'm just going to be starting again. It will take time to build up the channel because it took years. I started in 2016. And it's taken years to grow that audience. So even though my videos are still there, I can't rely on those numbers continuing to be the success of me staying in the miniature field my whole life. And that being something that helps fund my family and the bills. And
right. You can't rely on the same numbers, but it'll still be easier because you have a name. People will be looking for you. You have all these beautiful videos. It won't be quite the same as starting from scratch.
Exactly. Yes. I'm very thankful that I'm pretty sure I've saved everything. I hope I've saved everything.
So recently you did kind of a fun and to me brave project of organizing your workshop, because I say brave because I just cleaned up mine. But before I cleaned up mine, I would literally be embarrassed to show it. And why is it so hard to keep it organized and find things?
Well, for me, I feel like miniatures embodies every art form.
It does.
So if you create a miniature painting, you got to have painting supplies. If you want to recreate a miniature sculpture, you got to have sculpting supplies. If you want to do woodworking, you got to have woodworking supplies. And so you end up with almost every single art supply to do every single art form. And it becomes a lot. And then I had to separate organizing my materials and my office from organizing my miniatures, because organizing miniatures is a whole other thing. They're just so tiny. And so like one little handful of miniatures could be like 30 things, and it's 30 different decisions of where they go.
Yes.
The whole process is completely overwhelming to even just think about where to start.
It is. And I love your explanation, because I always sort of blame myself. I love how this takes the burden. It's not me. It's the art. It's the scope of the art. But I also have problems with my minis, because it's like, well, people are like, just put like things together. Does that mean everything Christmas? All cakes? What about a Christmas cake? Right. And that's an easy example. And some of these things are so, so tiny that I put them in something and I'm like, what if I just don't see it?
And I had that problem for a long time, because when I was doing the organization video over the miniatures, I kept finding things that I didn't even know. I had no idea, because I bought them 10 years ago and they got put underneath one thing that was bigger than them. And it was gone from my brain. It was gone from existence until I pulled it out to work on it for that video. And I found that the easiest thing to do is to make vague categories. So on that video, I put a PDF download where people could download it and see the categories that I made. And that worked well for my collection. Of course, I feel like a miniature collection is kind of like an amoeba, and it's just going to change, and it's going to be a different shape for each person. And then it's just going to change by year, because it depends on what project you're working on. So whatever organizational system that you go with has to be very changeable and adaptable, because if you just do one certain thing and it has to fit each cookie cutter item, you're never going to organize anything, because nothing about miniatures is cookie cutter.
I totally agree. And one thing I've learned is if you come up with a category and you get your little plastic embroidery floss box out and it fills up the box, that's the wrong category. Because if it's already full, What happens when you buy one more thing? The shelf life of that organization is going to be about a week.
One thing that I put into place during this organizational time, there's going to be multiple throughout my entire crafting journey, I'm sure, was something called a sorting bin. And it's an empty bin that when I go to a show or if I receive something, everything goes into the sorting bin. And once it's full, then I will pull out everything and sort it. I want to put things away quickly and I just want it out of the way. And so I've given myself that room to do that, to fulfill that need to just get everything put away. But then my caveat is, once that is full, then you need to go find a more permanent place for it. So I have the sorting bin on top of all of my other bins.
That is genius. You need an intermediary staging area.
Right. And it gives you that permission to have a mess, but it's a contained mess inside a box and it's easy to get to. So it's been working for me.
And that's not just a loose bin. That's actually like they're actually still in individual compartments.
Right.
But they're not categorized.
Right. So I have like a sorting bin for my smaller items that sits on top of my smaller item bins, and then a sorting bin for the bigger items that sits on top of there. And they just kind of stay there until they're full. And then I have to pull everything out.
Oh, I like that. So you don't even feel any guilt until it's all full.
No, because that's what they're for. They're for a mess.
They're for a mess, yes. And the reason it's important, I find it gets in the way of me doing the work. You know, if I sit down and I can't find anything, can't find my glue and my scissors, then I kind of wander away and I don't do anything.
Yes. And I find that I have to clean up almost after every single thing that I make, because I start to make this little creative cave, or this, like, carve out this little space where the thing I'm working on is. And then the chaos just emanates out from it on my desk and then onto nearby tables and onto chairs and onto whatever's nearby. And I can't start a new project because everything's already covered in stuff. So I have to stop. And now that everything's organized, it's not too bad to put everything away really quick. So I just put on a video, zone out, grab things one at a time, put it away. And then I have a nice surface to start the whole chaotic event over again. Because it doesn't look organized in the creative process, but having the ability to organize it in between is amazing.
I can see that. My husband calls them my Becky piles.
Yes. And almost every single workstation of people have posted and said, this is what I'm working on, looks exactly like that. There's the project in the center and just tools and glue and paint and everything just looks like an explosion going outward.
Sometimes at mini school, there are a few people who, when they're working on their projects, they put everything down in right angles, and I'm just never going to be that girl.
You know? I remember I went to my first miniature event, first ever, and they had all these tables laid out, which was great, room for a project. And I thought we were going to all get each a table. It was three people to a table.
Oh, dear.
I could not fathom how in the world were we going to work on a project and have our stuff out all at the same time. You get really good at, like, jostling things around so that everything fits. But, like, I came from the architecture world where you have these huge desks and everything. And then they're like, no, it's, you know, three people to a table. And I just could not fathom how that was going to be possible.
That's so funny. Well, that's actually helped me a lot. I think your organizational ideas are really good and they're realistic.
Thank you. I have to make them realistic. I think if you start to understand your own brain and your own tendencies, which is me, just like you said, putting stuff in piles, or like I even have a little cup here with some stuff in it sitting next to me that needs to go into the sorting bin. I was like, once I realize my tendencies of what I do, I'm like, okay, how can I use that to my advantage?
That's really smart. And as I'm sitting here, I'm also staring at some cups of little things that are waiting to go into bins. And you know, I might just call them my sorting station and then I don't need to do anything. It could be workshopped a little. I'll just say that. That's really great. So do you have any long-term or short-term goals you want to share with us?
Well, my short-term goals have kind of changed a little bit just because of some family things that are going on. But one of the things I would really love to start this year would be another cardboard house. I want to take the original cardboard house, chop it up, put it back together in a different way, and make a new project, because I think that's kind of the ultimate recycling project. If you're using an old project, make a new one. And I've had a lot of people comment, I love your projects, but I don't have room. I want to make new things, but I don't have room. Well, why not take an old project and make something new out of it? So that's something I really am excited to work on. I just have to kind of find the right time to start it, because I try to keep the number of projects that I'm working on down on my channel. Because if I just have 18 projects going at one time, people will be like, what in the world is she working on? I don't even know. So I try to limit myself on that.
And it's hard because I have so many more ideas than I do the time.
Oh, yeah. They're so easy to start a project. But to keep it going in the middle and the end, that's the hard thing.
Yes, I love that idea. So I assume it'll be a little smaller the second time.
My projects don't tend to go smaller.
Okay. So you'll chop it up and add and it'll still be big?
I already have like some like visions in my head of what will be happening. And I definitely want to add to it because I want to add to the story. But I think a lot of what I'll be doing is making new furniture for it, because I think that's what people really love, the accessible furniture using cardboard. And the furniture is what I don't have anymore. We auctioned that off. So using the house over again will be really fun, I think.
Oh, that will be. Yes, and it's like you're redecorating. It's time, right?
Right.
Want to keep up on the cardboard furniture trend.
Right.
That's great. Well, it's been so amazing having you on the podcast, and I thank you so much for sharing your time and your talent and telling us about your journey. It's been really fun.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me talk about my little corner of the miniature world. So I really appreciate it. And thank you for going out to see the captain's quarters. That whole museum is just amazing. I love being there. It's a magical experience. So having a piece of my own art there is just a complete honor. And whenever people tell me, hey, I went and saw this, and they send me a picture of them standing in front of it, or it just makes my day, completely makes my day.
I can't wait to share this podcast and all the pictures of all your great work.
Well, thank you for having me. And I look forward to hearing more future podcasts from you and seeing all the future museums and other artists you'll be talking to.
I never want to stop exploring the miniature community. And the great thing is it just keeps expanding and there's always something new to find.
Yes, definitely.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Wow. I so enjoyed talking to Ara, and I hope you did too. If you did, I hope you'll consider leaving a review or commenting or sharing on Instagram. That's how my podcast grows. Plus, I admit, it really makes my day. My next podcast will feature the super talented Chris Toledo. Check my Instagram, Mad About Miniatures, for the announcement of the drop date. In the meantime, remember, your dollhouse, your rules. Goodbye.